I kind of gave you a little outline, fairly simple outline to follow. And what I'd like to do is go through these topics. And basically, we can do a question and answer as we go along. So if you see something as we talk that you feel you need to ask a question about, please do so. We don't have to stick on this one particular crisis management team subject matter. If we get through it and you have questions about some other areas of church security, we can do that also. I'm going to talk a little bit about my relationship with different ministries and the elders, staff, etc., volunteers, tonight when I talk. But we can also talk about that subject also if you'd like. Let me get you a... Yeah. You could probably teach this class in here. Come on. Hi there. Why don't you come and get one of these, Jeff? Maybe. We may end up standing. The little outline that I gave you basically talks about where we start with crisis and what is a crisis. A crisis is generally defined as an emergency that threatens life or property, which may include fires, civil or criminal disturbances, weather disasters, medical issues, loss of building use, adverse media reports, other things like that. Negative consequences will result if not handled properly. That's a long definition of a crisis. Jeff, who's been involved in a crisis situation to a really great degree, understands that when things happen, as we heard Tommy speak last night, yesterday, and from Jeff, that chaos reigns in a crisis, and the whole purpose is to try to rein that in and get some semblance of, hey guys, you can sit up here, Jim, if you want to. Why don't you pass these out to the other two guys? I told the group when we started, if we get through this thing and we have some time, we can talk about other things with church security if you want to. Since you got my attention here, I don't have a problem with doing that. Also, if you have questions as we go along, please ask as we go along. I don't want to talk for an hour up here. I'd rather you folks interact and ask questions. I think we can get more done that way, especially everybody has their own purpose or church or organization, and you may have some different thoughts about where this should go, and I'm not opposed to that also. We've got some general areas of concern when it comes to crisis. You have safety, security, church's reputation, financial loss. The safety of the church is really important, and I think you got to have a relationship with your fire department. You got to have a relationship with your police department to a point where you should know who your fire marshal is, you should know who your commander is, or precinct leader, or whoever it is in your department. If you're with a state agency close by, you should know the post commander or sergeant that's in your area. I think that's important. Invite them to church. From the police's standpoint, you can invite them to say, listen, we need you to come over and check our windows and doors, and if you got a community officer, bring that person over. We'd love to meet them, and we'd love for them to come into our church. That opens dialogue, and that helps them come to your facility. If you're a large facility, if you're 1,000 or more people in a church, you're going to have a facility that's large, more than 100 or 200 or 300,000 square feet, and you want them to come on your property. You want them to know your building in case there's an emergency. For us, because of our size, we're an anomaly, but the fire marshal, I invited him over the first week I was on the job. The building was not quite opened yet. We were about 3 weeks from opening the building. Introduced myself to him. He brought a team over. We walked around for a couple hours in the building. He made suggestions. I had a notebook. I said, listen, he was a captain at the time. I said, listen, captain, you know, whatever you tell me, I'm going to write down. I'm going to try to correct. So it was like an informal visit. So he didn't write a letter to me saying I needed to fix all these things. I did it and opened up that dialogue. So we have a great relationship. I'm working on my third fire marshal, but we've got a great relationship because they've come up through the ranks. I let them come and train on our property. Every time they have a new truck or they want to test the pumper, they'll hook up to our Siamese head or whatever they call it and test, and the kid and their young recruits will play on our property. Love it. I let them walk through the building. Once a year they do an inspection anyway. So they bring their whole team from the fire station. They come with their trucks and they walk through and inspect our building, all the emergency lights and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I keep track of everything that's done in our building, whether it's our sprinkler testing, our panel testing, anything that they might require. If they ask for it, I got a book and I can show them the last test was done here. So everything's up to date. The fire extinguishers are all monthly. We check our fire extinguishers once a year. We have somebody. I mean, it just creates a great relationship with them. And that relationship extends in case of an emergency, of course, because of a fire. But I'll give you an example on a bomb scare. You know, what procedures do you have in place for a bomb scare? So what we do is, if there's a call, and I'll give you an example. We had a police officer's funeral at our church. There were probably 2,000 or 3,000 officers and their families there. And just before the start of the funeral, I wasn't there. These things always happen when I'm not there. But there was a suitcase, black suitcase, in the orchestra pit on stage. And the funeral is going to take place in our sanctuary. Well, someone spotted that, and then all of a sudden the funeral's got to be held up. And what do we do about that? Of course, we've got a bunch of police officers there. We've got bomb squad guys there. So they intervened and they took care of the issue, and was a musician that had left the case earlier in the day. So that's what it turned out to be. But if we had to declare an evacuation in that situation, especially with staff on the property, what we would do is we'd call the fire department, not 911. We'd call their office number and say, listen, we're going to pull the fire alarm to evacuate the building. We've got a bomb scare. So they know what's going on. They've been to our building, and you know the questions they're going to ask, well, where is it? Can we come under the main portico and do all this stuff? And so yeah, that relationship needs to be built as part of your crisis plan. And same with the police. Adam Houghton is here. He's a former Louisville Metro PD guy. They introduced him yesterday. He was with the SWAT team. And what he did was, fortunately, he was a member of our church, but I reached out to him, and I said, Adam, I said, anytime you guys want to use our building for training, you can. And they were like, yes! You know, it's big, it's round, they love to hide things and do training. So the SWAT team will come over once in a while and train in our building. So we've created that relationship. Now, part of that training process is, I also sit down with them, I say, okay, what if we have a scenario in the building? And they say, okay, so they plan out a scenario. So if we do have a kidnap or someone with a gun in the building or whatever, and they get there, they know where to come in. They come in our basement. We've got an operations place set up for them if they need to. They can pull a small truck into their building, not be noticed. So all that stuff just plays into the fact of keeping your facility safe, at the same planning for a crisis in case you have one. I mean, they've been in the rafters and, you know, the gun positions and all that kind of stuff, and they do all of that. Part of also the police department, they have canine units, and the canine units regularly come and train in our building all the time. So the bomb dogs and the drug dogs, we've got 100 acres. They run the dogs at night, you know, in our fenced-in baseball fields, and then they bring them in the building and they do training. So in case we have anything going on, like we have a large conference coming up in October, we have 5 nights of these special things coming. In 1 or 2 nights, we'll have to turn people away. We have almost 9,000 seats in our sanctuary. Well, we're going to turn people away on base who's coming. I can't share that with you because the contracts are not signed. But these people will draw a lot of people to come. And when they do, routinely, we'll ask our dog squad guys, I mean the canine guys, bring the dogs in. And because they're friends with us, they're not going to charge us. They'll come and sweep the building for us before an event and leave. So, I mean, that's a great relationship that we have with them also. So, I mean, the police are really, really great. Under the general areas of concern is church's reputation. The reputation of your church is important in the community. We've all seen the stories on TV where the pastors have fallen or someone's been arrested in the church for child abuse or something of that nature. So you got to prepare for that. And we have prepared for that by having a crisis management team. Now, who works on that team? If you're a church of 300 and I tell you, well, you need your attorney there and you need, you know, and it's going to go, no, I don't have that. So what you need to do is find out the key people in your church of 300. It may not be your pastor that is the spokesperson, because a lot of times the pastor will be emotionally involved or involved in a situation that occurs. So you don't want him in front of a camera. We have an attorney on our staff. She is a great attorney. She helps us out every day. She and I work together really well. But in a crisis, she gets emotional. So we can't put her in front of a camera. So either I end up in front of the camera, or one of our communication staff who trains and is PR people that do it on a daily basis, they end up in front of a camera. So if you're a small church, you got to find somebody in your church, whether it be a deacon or an elder, maybe possibly, who knows the inner workings of the church, that'll be your spokesperson. And what you got to also plan for, you got to make sure that before you make a statement of any kind, I think Tommy had a great example during the shooting in Maryville, is that you got to come up with a plan, you got to sit down and write a statement, and then I would take it one step further, and then he did, take it to the police who are on scene and says, this okay. Because you don't want to ruin their investigation by giving information that they don't want you to give. You know, I mean, as a church, you're sorry that something happened. You know, you're going to provide counseling. You know, we're praying for the families of the victims, and in some cases for the perpetrator. And the statement is not much more than that. So, you know, you got to plan for that, but you got to sit down sometime before it happens and say, this is what we do. On our crisis management team, we've got a security representative, which is me or my partner. We have a legal representative. We've got somebody from our administration. Our church has what they call a vision team that run the day-to-day operation. They're a full-time staff, mostly made up of ministers, a couple of lay people that are on staff. Our administration, we've got to have a representative from our administration, spiritual leader. I always recommend having somebody probably from as an elder or a deacon sit in on the meeting, if possible, because that helps. You get a perspective. Sometimes you're emotionally involved, and when Tommy talked, you know, he's holding the guy's neck yesterday and saying, you know, what do I do with this guy? You know, your emotions take over. So having somebody who's a spiritual leader in the church really helps in a situation where you're trying to make some decisions. I think that's important. Communications, we talked about the spokesperson. I think that's important. IT. A lot of times, including them in the initial phases of a crisis management team for planning for an event is important. Because if you've got a tornado that hits your building or severe weather that comes through, you're going to lose your communications, you're going to lose your IT system. And a lot of our databases are in there, information about our members, how do we do that. If a tornado rips your building through, do you have an off-site facility, a hot site, or whatever it is that you can set up immediately? Do you back up all your systems every day in order to recreate everything and start up again the next day? Smaller churches, when I visit smaller churches and I tell them these things, you know, their eyes are rolling and they're telling me, I've got one server in a closet. You know, what do you do about that? And so I said, well, then you back it up with a tape every night and you take the tape home. You know, at least you can recreate it from that tape. So, and as you get bigger churches will start hiring companies outside of the state, and somebody in Utah or California will store your stuff. You know, they'll pull that information at 2 o'clock in the morning, wake your computers up and pull out information and recreate and stash it for you. You know, cloud stuff is what they call it, but as you get bigger, you're going to need to do that, and it's not expensive. When we first started with our church, that was not available. Technology was not there yet, so we'd had a tape. We'd take a tape, stick it in a safe at work, and then I'd take a tape and take it to a company called Data Vault here in town, and they'd store it for us. So those things you have to think through. So IT is an important part of that. The facility manager, somebody that knows the building, where the electrical, water, all the utilities are, air conditioning. If somebody does something to your utilities, you know, you got to have somebody there. Plus, if you lose power and you don't have backup generators and stuff, how do you get power to the building? We have built a multi-million-dollar facility, and our main building does not have backup power. They just, you know, the elders, as they went through and designed the building, they said, backup power? Cross that one off. So we don't have backup power. So in the interim, what do? So we've called an electrical company, the guys that built the building, and we figured a way to hook up power to at least run our kitchen in a part of the building where we feel it's really important. And so in cases of severe emergency, we'll call for a generator to come trucked in and hook up. And now our two other buildings that we've built since then have backup power. Our office building has backup power and our youth building has backup power. But everything originally did not. So you got to plan for those things, whether, again, if you're a small church, a large facility, or even a school, you got to have some power to where you think, like the food, are you going to feed people, things of that nature. I think that's important. And then a ministry named or affected. And you're not going to know that until it happens. In a small church, it's going to be the person in charge of all the ministry. In my building, we've got 40 pastors. We've got ministries scattered all over the place. So if we have an abuse situation, then it's going to be the children's ministry that gets involved. They're going to be sitting at the table and make some decisions. If it's an accident, we had 40 elderly people on a trip on a bus in Kentucky. Rainy day, bus had an accident. We thought we lost a few of them, that they were dead. Their cell phones didn't work on the bus. They were in a bad situation. We heard the bus had flipped over. I mean, there was a lot of rumors coming in the first 10 minutes. We're standing gathering information as the four TV crews in Louisville pull up to our front door and start pulling up their antennas. And we're like, we don't have any information for these guys yet. It was just interesting how that happened. So, do we have any list of names or any? No, we didn't have anything. So we called the senior ministry people, and they came in on board, and they gave us what was going on, where the trip went, where the trip was coming from, how many people were on board. And luckily, a passing motorist had a cell phone that worked, and then we got the information through a cell phone from the minister that was on the bus. No one died, but people got severely injured. And of course, while we're giving our statement to the press, they've got a helicopter over the bus. I mean, that's how fast it happens, right, Jeff? I mean, it happens so fast, it's scary. And so we didn't have time to pull three people together and talk. The news media is knocking on our door. And so you can't keep them out of the building. So you, yeah. That's amazing. And then, you got to decide, do you let them in the building? Do you have a site where they sit off of the front door? I mean, who do you let them talk to? And so we had family members starting to arrive at the church, and you're like ushering them in the building because they don't even know what's going on with their family members, try to keep them away from the media, because the first thing they're going to say is, well, I heard three people were dead, and, they run in the building. So we got all this false information. So as they're coming in, we're creating this plan to try to respond. So, I mean, that's very important. So the ministry involved is very important. If you can get them involved very quickly, that helps, because they'll have information. The duties of the team. You got to have some training. I briefly touched upon it, where the team has got to get together before you have a crisis. I think that's important. I think you got to go back and say, okay, who's going to be part of our crisis management team, and call a meeting and say, okay, what do we do in the form of a crisis? And you'd lay out the scenarios, bad weather, a worst case scenario, shooting in the building or on campus, child gets hurt, you got a traffic accident, somebody falls. We do an Easter pageant every year. We took 2 years off, we're starting back up this year, where we fly four angels and Jesus Christ flies, about 80 feet vertically and about 200 feet that way, and it's on a wire. That's a huge risk factor. And what if somebody falls? In Cincinnati, a couple years ago, they were doing a Christmas pageant, I think, at a church. And the actors, as you would call them, had a part where they actually climbed up a rope, like Cirque du Soleil or whatever it is. And when they got up to a certain point of the rope, they had a cable that was hooked up to them. So they let go and kind of just floated around in the air. Well, what they did was, when they were hooking the girls up, and I know this because our pastor's daughter was sitting in the audience that night, when they were hooking the girls up, they did it in complete darkness because they didn't want anybody to see it. So here you got a guy hooking up a girl with a harness around her waist in the dark. She's wearing a flowing outfit with a lot of layers of clothes. And what does he do? He hooks it up to her costume. He misses the ring. He doesn't even have a flashlight to see what he's doing. So needless to say, she gets up 20-something feet. She lets go. She falls to her death in a church in Cincinnati in front of, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of people. So, I mean, you sit down and you go, ah, now you got somebody who's actually died in front of all these people. What do? You got the media that's going to be there. It hit national news. You've got, what do you provide counseling for anybody if they want counseling? That was in the audience. And you got the cast and crew now that are all upset and distraught. It becomes a really big crisis. So, caused by a mistake, sure. And then you also have the insurance company now that's going to be breathing down your throat. The police are going to investigate. And although OSHA may or may not have jurisdiction in the church, they may be on your property to see what was going on. So you've got all these things. So you bring your team together and you say, how do we respond? And you make some really great, trying to make some quick, positive decisions to get the word out. Another example of a crisis, and I'll tell you, I got a call from a church in Ohio. This happened about 2 years ago. A young pastor called me up and he says, Ronnie, we're starting a how to do background checks on our people. We have not done any of that. So we spent some time on the phone. We emailed back and forth. I made some suggestions. How do you do it? What processes you put in place? And who should be running it and how you should do it? So they did. He responded well. I mean, they put everything in place. They did background checks on all their staff, on all their volunteers that touch children. One of his newly hired youth ministers, who had been cleared through the background check and reference process, was arrested when he answered an email that he thought was a 14-year-old girl, and he was trying to meet her to have sex. So the police are like all over this. The media at the time just went crazy. The guy's picture was in the newspaper, on the internet. This 20-something-year-old boy was arrested. So the pastor calls me, and he says, I need some help. And so we talked about some things that he might do. They had some really good suggestions. Their team came together. He had some elders and some other people in his church come together, and they came up with a plan that basically said the next day they had a meeting open to the congregation. Congregation only. They brought the congregation in. And they had to do some damage control now. So they brought the congregation in, and he told the congregation exactly what happened. And he said, we had no idea. This guy had never been arrested before. We ran a complete criminal background check, sex offender check. We checked all his references. Everything came back clean. The church he worked for before and the college he went to before that had nothing except glowing remarks to say. We apologize for what happened. We're going to do the best we can to prevent this from happening again in the future. But this is something that, this guy did on his own. We had no control over. And then what he did was, the next night, he ran an ad in the paper the next day inviting the community to come to church. And he'd like to talk to them about what happened. And he did the same to the community. He said hundreds of people came from the community. They had all these tough questions. Why'd you hire them? Do you do background checks? What kind of checks do you do? Who do you use? What's your criteria to determine whether somebody can work with children or not? And, what was the references? Did this, all these tough questions. Church did not lose any attendance. It picked up attendance. And his reputation in the community is strong because he was open to do that. So he handled the crisis well, I thought.
Did he have a team in place before that, or was it spontaneous?
Yeah, he did not have a team in place. I'll bet he has one now, though. But yeah, he quickly pulled some people together. I told him, I said, do you have an attorney in your congregation that you can at least get some legal advice? Do you have a reporter maybe or somebody that can do some PR for you? Do you have a deacon or an elder, a couple of them probably, to sit in on this? Do you have a financial guy? Because, you may be looking at losing tithes and offerings, depending on what you say. You just don't know. Are you going to get sued? Do you call your insurance people? Make sure they're in on the conversation. So you get all of that involved, and he did. And they came out as best as you can get, deeming the information that occurred. So, I mean, those things are important, and it's tough to do when the guy's been arrested and now you got to do something. It's always best to bring the team together, whether it's three people or six or seven. And don't make it too big. If it gets too cumbersome, you've got a committee and no one will decide on anything. And no one, I mean, you can write a statement and everybody will add or delete words and change it and everything else. And that's where I think that spiritual guidance, especially from an elder or deacon, a church leader, comes in. Because they're basically going to say, you know what, guys, this is what it needs to be. I think that really helps. That's what I find with our elders anyway. They need to be trained. That means the meetings and tell them what to plan, the scenarios. Respond immediately when notified. They got to be able to come quickly. You know, if something occurs, in a half an hour is going to be too late. They really need to respond. And I think that's important. I mean, they got to have pagers, cell phones, whatever, where you can get in touch with them. Even if you bring a conference call of four of them together on the phone and two guys sitting in a room, you get your quorum there and you can make some decisions. I think that's important. Maintain confidentiality. In a church setting especially, you got to be able to say things in a room that'll stay in the room, especially when it comes to members. Our databases have a lot of personal information on them. And so you don't want to share information that's not confidential. I mean, you don't want to share confidential information to the media, especially when they're going to ask you family information, and you may not even notify the family yet. The police have not knocked on somebody's door. To give information out is just really bad. Or if you let them take a picture of somebody's car sitting in the parking lot with license plate number and the family hasn't been notified. I mean, you really got to be careful about things like that. So that's why one of the things you do with the media is try to create a relationship which you can. And the larger the church you are, the more relationship you can build, because they've usually done a couple of stories on you for some reason or another. And so when they come, you can say, you know what, we're going to ask you to park here and do your interviews here. And we'll provide people to bring out for you to interview. But we're going to ask you to stay here and not come into church. We're dealing with a situation. I worked for a restaurant company years ago, and we had a murder. I was the security director of this company. So I flew down to this town, and we closed the restaurant, of course. One of our employees was murdered delivering some food. So I get down there, and I've never been to this town before. It's one of, you know, 1,000-something restaurants that we own. And I get down there, and the franchisee who owned the restaurant is just beside himself. He just lost an employee to a murder. His employees are distraught. I mean, you can't talk to them. So we quickly get counseling for them, bring in some counselors. But I arrive at the restaurant. The reporter is standing there with her cameraman at the front door taking pictures inside the restaurant, trying to get video of the staff sitting in the back crying. And so, could you move, please? Can we move here? I'll give you an interview. Can you move here? You know, you got to move them away, get them away from the employees and the staff, from the people that this has affected. And then I made some statements. And the media, if you don't know them, and if you've never been in front of a camera, this is what happens. What are you going to ask me? And she'll say, I've got these six questions. Oh, okay, great. All right, great. Turn the camera on. We're ready. Boom. Guess what? She never asked me any of the six questions. You know, she's going to come at me with whatever she can get a response from, an emotional response. So be prepared for that. Your spokesperson really needs to be trained to deal with the media, because the media will ask you questions where you're going to say, you know, and you might say something that really gets you in trouble. So I'll be very careful. And that's what happened in this murder that I was at. She came after me, and finally, I was just not answering her questions, and she turned it off. She said, so you're not going to answer my questions? I said, no, sorry. You need to leave. So, you know, you just got to get them out of the way sometimes. It's important. Be able to meet periodically. Every once in a while, you probably need to sit down and kind of just get to know everybody again in that setting. You may see them on other meetings or anything, but get them together occasionally as a crisis team and kind of sit them down and say, okay, we haven't had anything, you know, thank you, Lord, since we've been doing this. But just in case, let's go over some scenarios again. It's important. And it's also important, I visited a fairly large church once, and they had me come and spend some time there to try to help them. They had some factions in the church that were pulling them apart. in reference to their safety of the facility. So they wanted me to come in and actually be the bad guy. You know, come in and say, this is what you need to do. But I came in, and what I did is I listened a lot for a whole day to these, really it turned out to be two people that wanted to be in charge of security. One was a security director, and they didn't give me any authority, and the other one was a guest services person who wanted all the authority, and that's fine. And I finally, after when my time was up, and I sat down and with the different ministries, I finally set the two people together privately, and I said, listen, somebody's got to be in charge. Because in a crisis, you can't have people calling you and calling you. And you're making decisions that both of you may be totally opposite of one another. You got to have one person in charge. Whether it's you or you, somebody's got to decide. And like Tommy said yesterday, you know, everything starts happening and it all comes down to this almost chaos that occurs around you. And somebody's got to say, do this, do this, do this. If you get two people doing that, you're going to duplicate your efforts or may not get some things done at all. You know, you may think, well, did you tell them about kids? No, did you? No, you know, and you'll get this going on. So be prepared. That's why one person needs to be in charge. And I'll give you an example. When we have a crisis that occurs in our church, if I'm on campus, I make the immediate decisions. The church has given me that authority based on my experience and what I know about the church. If I'm not there, there's a guy that works for me, Mark. He makes those decisions. If we have time to consult, we will. But if we don't, we'll make a decision, and then we'll back up and say, okay, how did we do? You know what I mean? But you got to make a decision, and you got to have one person do that. I've made decisions, and I'll talk about this tonight. I've made decisions in the church where my cell phone is starting to blow up from the elders calling me, wanting to know why this is occurring. Well, they don't have the information. And I'm in the situation where I can't answer the cell phone. Sorry, I'm on the radio, we're handling the crisis that's occurring right now, I can't answer you. So when I get a meeting after the crisis all ended, my boss sits me down with his boss, and they say, now why didn't you answer the phone calls? So, well, I'll tell you what, Jack, I didn't have time. I can't get on the phone and explain to somebody who's not at the situation what's going on and why my decision-making process is occurring. I said, I'm sorry, I have to do this. So there's a great relationship that I have with the leadership of the church. A lot of times they'll let me do something and then pull me back in the room and say, now why'd you do that? But for the most part, they've allowed me to do that. And you'll see I have a video tonight that'll show you opposite of that with an elder. So occasionally there's some conflict because they don't understand what I'm trying to accomplish. Got to balance the ministry as well as the security. And occasionally I've got to push the security to create the safety that needs to occur during a crisis. If I've got a missing child, I've got to do some things that the church normally doesn't do about stopping every car and opening trunks and things of that nature. You know, we've done that. You know, locking the building down, we've done that. You know, we had a bomb supposedly in our building. We had to evacuate, we've done that. But I'm not going to call somebody and quick, do we need to evacuate? I think got a bomb in the building. No, we're going to evacuate now. So you got to be able, that crisis team has got to say someone's in charge at the time that it occurs. And most of the time, I'm on the property, or my partner's on the property, so security's in charge most of the time. In a smaller church, it may not be that way at all. It may be an administrator, maybe a deacon, maybe somebody like that that you give the authority to make that decision. So just remember that. On a pre-crisis thing, have a crisis management plan, update it annually, write stuff down, you know, dust the book off every once in a while when you have your meetings and kind of go through it. I think that's important. Conduct an annual test of the plan and the team. Our church is so large, we get tested all the time. So small churches, you may have to do it more often. You may have to say, okay, what happens if, you know, what happens if? Install an emergency notification system, text or email. I'm learning as we go along, like we have a new insurance company, just came on board, Gallagher upstairs, they've got a booth. They do a great job, they're out of Chicago, got great resources. And part of the deal with them is, as what they call their impact program, is part of the premium that I pay, they offer the texting emergency notification for free. So a lot of what you do in your planning for safety and security include your insurance company. Because First of all, they love the plans. When I sit down with our underwriters and I tell them, here's our plans. I go to a meeting once a year in Chicago and we sit down across the table from our underwriter and they ask me questions. What are you doing for fire safety? What are you doing for security? What are you doing in case of a flood or emergency and stuff? And I tell them, we have all these plans in place. The underwriter then determines, because the underwriter doesn't want any risk. The underwriter wants the company to make money and have no risk. So, but when they hear all these things that you have in place and you got your plans and your teams in place to respond, your insurance premiums are going to go down. I guarantee you that. If you don't have anything in place, then you've assumed more risk. So the insurance company is going to say, there's more likelihood of something happening bad, so we're going to charge you for that up front. So that's what happens. So include your insurance companies for that. And the texting and email services, there are services out there that you can pay $100 a month, $20 a month, and you pay per text or whatever. I would suggest getting something that you can do as many texts as you can for one price if you're going to pay for it. There are companies out there. Or try to get your insurance company to get a recommendation from them. And the other thing is, if you've got a database system in your computer system at church, some of those have the ability to text emergency notification and update frequently as people come on and off of your payroll. And our texts primarily are just for staff. We don't have a text for our congregation. Our children's ministry has a text for the parents of the kids, telling what meetings and things of that nature. But for emergency purposes, we focus on our staff. You know, bad weather, the building's closed, tornado coming, leave the building, fire alarm, whatever the case may be. So you can kind of segregate it that way. Backup power to support data systems, we'll talk a little bit about that, and we talked earlier about that. Even a UPS, a power system close to a server will help, but have some backup systems for your data. I think that's important. Is your data backed up frequently, securely, and accessible? I think that's important. If it's off-site, your IT manager or somebody in your church should have the ability to be able to capture that information if you need to. Remote data center, we talked a little bit about that. I think it's important to where you can get a laptop like he has there and plug in someplace and gather your information. Right now, I've got email capability. You know, I can dial in and get my email, but that's about where I'm at. I'm limited to that. You've got to be an administrator to get more information. But there's always somebody on staff that can dial in remotely and get information on any part of our data system, including our database. So I think that's important. Do you have enough bandwidth to accommodate the staff working offsite? So we have 400 employees, right? Tornado comes down and wipes our building up. Do we have an off-site facility that has enough bandwidth so everybody goes home on their laptops and works? Or if our data, you know, if we got to go offline, do we have enough bandwidth to do that? I deal in security cameras at our facility. Whether you have 2 or 100 cameras, you still have to have bandwidth if you're going to go on IP or you're going to do it internet. I can dial into my cameras at work at home from my laptop. Do we have enough bandwidth to accommodate that for the IP cameras? You know, we have an off-site facility in southern Indiana. I want to put IP cameras there, and our IT guys are saying, we don't have enough bandwidth right now. You got to wait. So that's holding up the cameras in southern Indiana. So I had a PowerPoint presentation I had yesterday I was sending to somebody at work. Because it had a bunch of pictures, it was too big for the email. So, I mean, all those things come into effect. Current notification system. Your insurance agent really is an important person. Never forget them. They need to know what's going on, whether it's a crime, workers' comp, or crisis of any kind. Try to get them on the top of a list someplace. Because they've got resources they can send you. You know, you're paying for a service. Fire department. Like we talked about, fire marshal is important, police department, bomb squad, SWAT, and try to get somebody from the agencies around your facility that you work with and know. As a church, I invite them to church. Our Easter pageant every year, I give 50 tickets to the fire department. Come, we'd love to have you. Maybe some of you become members sometime. Police department, I give tickets to the Easter pageant out to all the single women in the police department that have kids, we want them to come, and then anybody else that wants a ticket, I get 100 or so tickets free, and I give them out. I want them to come. I mean, that's important. Federal agencies, FBI, Secret Service, there are a bunch of groups around. InfraGuard is a big group around the country that involves a bunch of businesses, and an FBI usually runs that in a local agency, and small towns and big cities have them. And it's a way for people to get together in a room and discuss security of their business and help from the FBI and federal agencies. We're fortunate, we live in a big enough city where we have an FBI office here. So there's a group. Homeland Security is large, it's huge. And there's some people attending this conference that are part of that. Under the Homeland Security umbrella, there are agencies under Homeland Security. And Louisville, for example, has an agency attached to the mayor, this emergency management group that Homeland Security helps. And there are many large businesses, like here in Louisville, it's UPS is a part of it, Ford, they're a part of that. A subgroup of that are guys like me. All the security directors in the city meet in a subgroup. And we meet once a month, network, get to know each other, visit each other's facilities. So we have a lot of resources in case we have them. So that's a great way to do it. And the FBI and the Secret Service, just for your information, IT, if you got a problem with an IT issue where someone's hacking into your computers, causing havoc in your church, the Secret Service has an unbelievable IT forensic group. And they do it for free. So you don't have to pay somebody if your computer's burning up because of hackers or stuff. Call the federal government and say, if there's a Secret Service group close by, they'll come and look. Or even the FBI has a good group too, but the Secret Service is really the people right now that are up on that. So you can use them. Vendors, keep track of your vendors. Everybody should be on speed dial. Your plumber, electrician, locksmith, fire sprinkler contractor, inspector, alarm monitoring company, of course, medical supply contact or company, somebody that can, for instance, the H1N1 thing, everybody was looking for these hand sanitizers. You couldn't find them. They were triple the cost if you called anybody. Well, we deal with a medical supply guy. He provides all of our medical supplies for our first aid kits or whatever else we need. I called him. We had them. They were in Indy. He put them on a truck. Everybody's concerned about masks. We're going to have masks. I got 20,000 of them sitting at a storage area in my church. Got them the next day. You couldn't get them. It's just that the relationship that we built over the years, I'm a customer of his. He'll get them. And he won't charge me an arm and a leg for them because he wants my business. Wholesale food supplier. If you got a kitchen and you're going to feed people, you need to know where you can get some food in the emergency. If you've got a catastrophic event like a shooting or something like that occurs. And like Tommy said, he had to feed all these people. You know, go buy some cheese trays. But if you got a kitchen or you got a food supplier, you can call them up. You know, Cisco guy, hey, I need some food. I got 200 people here we got to feed, man. So, you know, that's what you need. It's a good supplier. Heavy equipment company. In the case where a part of your building is collapsed, it's nice to know somebody with a tractor, a backhoe, bulldozer. You know, those guys are important. And those are the guys that will get you the generators. Handheld radios. If you don't have radios in your church, if you're a smaller church or an organization that does not have any, the family channel radios that cost about $40, recharge with an earpiece, work fine in most small churches and buildings. They work fine. They got 114 channels on them. Just got to learn how to get them, and once you get them, our church in southern Indiana, most all of our communication is with those handheld radios. In our big church, we've got these big Kenwoods that cost $450 a piece, what you guys probably carry similar. But a lot of churches and facilities don't need them. Those handheld work fine, those family channel radios that you can buy at Service Mart or wherever, Walmart. Just buy the ones that can recharge and have a capability of an earpiece. Beekeeper and animal remover, or what do you want, a critter remover or whatever it is, those are important. Bees will come and set up a hive very quickly, and you'll be in trouble very quickly. You'll have to close a part of your building or an entrance or something. So make sure you can get a beekeeper or animal remover. We deal with skunks and raccoons on our property. They're like, you know, it's such a big piece of property, they come on our property, so we occasionally call these guys to remove them. And like Canadian geese are a protected species. Canadian geese are really good, nice, beautiful animals, but what they do is if they mate on your property, their children forever and ever will come back to where they were born. And their children will come back to wherever they were born. So in a matter of 4 or 5 years, you could have a couple hundred Canadian geese when you started with two. So in some states, you can get a permit not to kill the geese, but to remove the eggs from the nest. And you got to renew that permit every year. In the state of Kentucky, you can do that. We do it every year. We get a permit to remove the eggs. I don't. Just have to, you know. For us, we got 4,000 cars on our property, and the Canadian geese have a nest in one of our lots. They'll attack people. So you just got to be very careful. So that's how. Pardon me?
They make a mess on the property.
Everybody loves the little babies until they come back next year and then have more babies. So that's what we do. Crisis response, bring the team together quickly, evaluate the information, and make decisions. Mr. Vernon said it well, be decisive. I think you got to do that. Provide resources where and when needed. You know, you got to make some phone calls and call some people if you have to. Prepare staff, congregation, and media statements. There may be three separate statements, but you got to make them. The staff and congregation need to know what happened, what they should do, and how they will be affected. You can't keep them in the dark, because all the innuendos and all the stories will come out that you won't like. Continuously monitor and update decisions during the crisis. As it's happening, try to make decisions as on the fly. Sometimes you got to make some decisions. You know, oop, the media's here. Oop, here comes a couple of ambulances. Oop, fire department's here. You know, where do they go? What do they do? So, I mean, that's what you got to do. In post-crisis, follow-up communication to staff, congregation, and media. Just like the guy in Ohio, the pastor in Ohio, he sat down with his staff, he sat down with his congregation, he sat down with the public. He opened the church up to have those meetings, and information was first-hand knowledge. And as Jeff can tell you, and as Tommy told us yesterday, it's interesting when you get the first-hand knowledge because it changes what you had heard really happened. You know what I mean? The perception and the reality are different. You know, what I heard in Maryville was pretty much what he talked about, but there were some things that he said I had not heard before that contradicted information that was either in media or I'd heard from other people. So it always makes sense. So give them the information. In post-crisis, follow-up communication to staff, crisis media. Be prepared to mention the recovery process and any corrective actions that will be done in investigations of the crisis. Tell people what's going on. I mean, you don't have to give them all the information, but tell them what you're doing. I think it's important. And debrief within 3 days. Anything longer than that, you're going to start forgetting what happened. The stories are going to change. Your memory's going to blur. And at my age, I got to have it like right away. I remember the story of Jerry Lewis and his telethons. He would do a telethon and stay up for all these hours in 3 days and raise these millions of dollars. And as soon as the telethon was over and the lights went dark, they went right into a conference room and critique what they had done for the last 3 days to prepare for next year. Because everything was so fresh. He was not going to wait a month. Now's the time. Everybody came up with a plan for the following year on what they had just done. And I think that's important in a crisis because you can sit back and you can say, man, I wish I would have done this, this, and this. Well, that's when you have to have the meeting and say, okay, now we got to critique this so we can do better next time. And then analyze the event and implement new policies and procedures. Really tear it apart and see what we did right and wrong. And the other thing is, you know, God's going to have his hand in this one way or the other, or he's going to permit something to happen. And we just got to realize that we're not in control of this a lot of times. And we've got to ask for his sovereignty in what we do. So at the end of the day, you sit down and critique the event and say, should have done this, this, and this. You know, Tommy said when he wishes he would have stood at that door a couple more seconds. You know what? It happened. God could have prevented it, didn't. For his glory, in the end, yes. We just need to understand that. Okay. Any questions? Any questions about any other thing? Any other topics? I'll take this off now.
You talked a lot about your facility. Do you have emergency
Emergency plans for overseas, yes, our missions department. We work with a medical assistance company. There's a bunch of them out there. Global Rescue out of Boston, Massachusetts. International SOS out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. There's a bunch of them. Anyways, and I list some in the book, by the way. But what you need to do is have a plan. And what we do is we pay a premium. And you can do this for each day that they're out. You can do this for a month. You can do this for a year. And the way we do it, since we have so many people traveling overseas, we contract with this medical assistance company and pay them a flat fee. They're an insurance company. And if somebody gets hurt, injured, or dies overseas, they will respond. There's no deductible, depending on the plan you sign up. There's no deductible, and they'll do what they need to do to get them out or provide care. And so that's really important.
I realize that. What about if you have someone that is affected by tourism or taken hostage or something like that? Do you have any person that the team leader calls? Does everybody have the same story?
Right. What we have in place is I keep a list of all of our missions trips with me. I got a little binder I carry around with me, and it has me everybody that's out right now and where they're at in their list. And I'm the guy. I get the phone call. But every leader of every trip is given information from our medical assistance company. I say medical, but they also provide security. They provide repatriation in a security setting, too. Give an example. The Mumbai bombing that occurred recently is kind of recent in everybody's memory. The company we use had clients in that building. So as soon as the clients were released from that building, our company had representatives there and kind of whisked them away. They were put in a car. They were left to a predetermined destination for medical, psychiatric evaluation, and then put on the airplane and sent back to where they were from. So those medical assistance companies also do security. The hostage people will probably not call us. Jim is very familiar with some of the stuff that has occurred over the world years and years. The Burnhams are a really great example of a husband and wife team that were kidnapped, and he eventually died. And that whole hostage situation, the church was really never involved. The organization was never really involved. They had someone doing it for them. And that's what we pay our company for. They will provide it. If we get a call directly, everything will be routed to me. And if they realize they're talking to a church, all that information will pass on to our security company, medical security company, because they will be doing a lot of the negotiations and their representatives. And the people that they have are really trained in this. I'm not. You know, I'd be giving information that would be probably not good for our hostages. So that's important. Yes, sir?
Ryan, keep in mind, too, that any American abducted abroad or under terrorism abroad, an FBI agent automatically enters in as a negotiator.
Now, right.
We have no choice. A church, anybody, you can't refuse it.
Right.
It's federal law now, so they do come in.
Right. So you see, the resources are there. It's just knowing when they're going to come. But like I said, if a group of the 40 highest profile terrorist groups kidnap somebody, they're not calling your church. They're making a statement, and they're going to want somebody to call them. The FBI will probably know how to get in touch with these groups, or like FARC or whoever it may be. You know, they'll make their demands known, and they'll probably make it known publicly. Yeah, because that's why they did the kidnapping. So I don't know of any cases where a call has come directly to a church.
We do that here. Security, we're the backup.
Yeah.
The teams we have, we're just, like I said, liaisons. And probably we use it more if you have a group that's in a foreign country and maybe they have a medical emergency back here. You've got a son or your husband that's in somewhere in another country and you don't have anybody to get hold of. We have the company, they even did a threat assessment, and they'll throw whatever country they're going to. There's
Tons of resources. The company we use has updated every 24 hours, and if something is happening, it's every hour. And they'll give you a code, and you go in and you pull up all this information. Before our missions trip people go out, they're given all this information. The team leader has access to all this. All the members can go in and pull up all this information on the country, including the shots they need, the medical, the State Department contacts, how to register. We give them this whole thing about where we stand as a church and require them to do. And I've dealt with many where I've had calls in the middle of the night. For us, when they're overseas and something happens, they call what we call an alarm center from one of these companies. They initiate the case, and then I get the call. I get the second call. So by the time I get the call, there's already things in place and starting to happen. If you're a large church or an organization, there is, through your insurance company, called KNR, Kidnapping and Ransom Insurance. If there is a huge exposure, it's not really expensive, and it's something that you may want to think about. But in some cases. I mean, for instance, I had a request to go to Mexico to do some security work down there. If I went, I'd have a bunch of insurance covering me and some other stuff. But I talked the group out of going. It just wasn't feasible, and it didn't make sense. The reason they wanted to go, we'd have to hire this bunch of security, and it's not guaranteed. You know, I'd have to be working from another country out of England to provide people that I knew. And I mean, it just went on and on and on. So, yeah, and you know, you just got to choose and pick. However, on the flip side, this is the pushback I get from missions. Evangelize the world. So guess what? We send teams to guess where? Afghanistan. We do. So it's part of our mission. So I got to reduce the risk by giving them as much information as I can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any other questions? Thanks. Appreciate it.